What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 263 on this Monday, April 13th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green here with you. It is spring game week. After a one-year hiatus, the spring game is back in 2026. No Crimson Combine. Thank you, God. And we're looking forward to it. Tom and I are going to be there at the stadium on Saturday. Colin Kenny, of course, will be there as well. We're going to set the table a little bit. Spring obviously winding down. What are we looking forward to seeing on Saturday in a game-like setting? You know, some new players, obviously. Some position groups have been remade. We'll get into it. We'll set the table a little bit on the show today. And as we usually do on Monday, we'll hit some other sports as well. Big road series wins for both OU softball and baseball. The Hoops portal is open. Some early movement there. So we'll get into all that as well on a packed multi-sport Monday, as per usual, here on the program this afternoon. Before we get started, though, reminder, subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Promo code SoonersPod60, all one word if you're listening on podcast, gets you 60% off a VIP membership to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Spring ball still in motion here. It's winding down, but getting into the spring, recruiting picks up, summer stuff, and obviously fall camp and the season will be here before you know it. So be sure to dive in deep with us every single day over at Sooners Illustrated. All right, Tom, let's get into it. Spring game is back. Like I said, I mean, we've been looking forward to this. You know, I think especially after last year where they didn't have the spring game, they had the Crimson Combine, which they kind of threw together. I've been pretty open about it. It wasn't great, right? It was what it was.
I think everybody has.
it was bad. There has been a little extra appetite for the spring game, I think, from the fans and just from us, frankly, from me. I'm a little more interested than normal, I would think, just because we didn't have it last year. Looking forward to getting there on Saturday. What are you going to be watching for the most? I mean, we can bounce around a little bit here, but when you're going into the weekend, what's the main thing you want to learn or player you want to see? Where does your mind go first? Like I said, we can kind of bounce around a little bit, but top thing for you that you're looking forward to seeing on Saturday?
For me, it starts with the offense. I want to preface this by saying, look, they're going to be very vanilla. It's the spring game. They every school ever keeps things very vanilla for the spring game because they don't want to give away too much, especially when so many of these things are now televised or streamed somewhere. But the two things offensively I'm really curious in seeing is, okay, what does John Mateer's, you know, mechanics, how does he look running this offense? Absolutely. You know, in year two at Oklahoma, year four overall in the system, you know, how has he progressed through the spring after having, like we've discussed, that time in the off season to heal his thumb a little bit more, tweak his throwing motion and get his arm slot proper and just like not fall into some of the habits that he picked up because of the injury last year. So that's the first thing that I really want to see. And then second, and I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to see from this standpoint with them keeping him vanilla, but what does this run game look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we heard from Hayden Hansen last week and like he was out there breaking news, like a TV reporter, just like, hey, breaking news for you guys. The run game's here and it's a beautiful thing to see.
Right.
You know, he talked about, you know, two tight end sets, you know, 11 personnel, obviously. He said even, you know, made a mention of 13 personnel at the goal line, you know, getting three tight ends out there. Certainly it seems like they have the bodies there to be able to do that this year if they want. But I'm curious to see what that run game looks like, even if it's pared down in a vanilla form. You know, how much under center stuff do we see versus shotgun from last year? How many two tight end sets? What does this all look like to give fans just a sense of excitement going into the fall and something to look forward to? Because I think that's the biggest question, you know, everybody that's following this team has about, you know, this team going into this season is, can the run game be, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, top of the country type stuff. It just needs to be efficient. It needs to be effective. It needs to be able to complement what Ben Arbuckle wants to do with his passing game with John Mateer and those new weapons at receiver.
Yeah, no doubt. I think without question, those would be the top two for me as well. Especially John Mateer. I mean, I think there's a lot of intrigue there. I mean, by all accounts, John's had a great camp. You know, we've obviously got to see him in person a few times. You know, he's been open about tweaking the throwing motion. And then, you know, something that we can't, and again, he's looked great. By all accounts, he's had a great camp. We don't see the scrimmages, right? Those are close to the public. is he going to take care of the ball? I mean, that's just the obvious. But, you know, can he get through this thing and you feel like he played well? Does he not turn the ball over? Does he make good decisions? Does he stretch the field while also taking some of the safer stuff? Like, just – and again, it you preface everything with the fact that it's a spring game. I mean, you acknowledge that. It's not like an actual game. It's vanilla, like you said. Defense is going to keep it vanilla too. Like, you don't want to overreact to anything. But I think there's a lot of interest there. You know, whenever Colin and I do the instant reaction show on the field after the game, I'd be shocked if we didn't lead with John Mateer. And just like how he looked, how he played, that's going to be the first thing we talk about. I'm certain of that. And then I'm with you on the run game too. I had the same thought of just – and it's not even as much the running backs, although I do look forward to seeing Jonathan Hatton in full uniform out there running around. Same for Zephon Walker, even throwing a Lloyd Avant as well, who's had a nice camp. But like you said, just the way it looks, does it look like the tight ends are setting the edge? Is the defensive line winning repeatedly, which could be a good thing considering that they're not going to have Stone and Jackson? Like, that could be encouraging, but at the same time, it would be a little frightening on the other side because This has been the emphasis of really the offseason, but especially spring camp, is running the ball better and the tight ends providing more in the run game and everything like that. We talked about it at length the last several weeks. So, what does it look like in a game? You know they're going to want to try and run the ball a little bit. I think with past spring games, running back has tended to be a position that pops. Like, one guy has a couple of nice moments in the spring game. I think a Kendi Brooks once upon a time. Like, it's happened where guys kind of have big spring. The MVP of the spring game is a running back a lot of the time, it seems like. So can one of these guys go do that? One of these two youngsters or Lloyd Avant? I'm definitely interested in that. So I'm with you. Those are the top two things for sure for me as well.
If a running back was to win MVP on Saturday, who do you think would it be?
Probably Hatton, if I had to guess. I don't know. You could go take a flyer like on an Andy Bass or something.
I was going to go with an Andy Bass, not because like he's, you know, necessarily had like a breakthrough spring.
You've been waiting for this though.
He's healthy, you know, coming off, you know, multiple ACL surgeries. And, you know, from my experience, not just at Oklahoma, but like at Auburn and stuff, it's so often you see like a guy who's like a walk-on or a little bit further down the depth chart that just like puts up some big numbers late in the day. And it's just like, I don't know, that's just kind of where I lean if we were to pick a running back. But I think I'm with you. I'm excited to see like what Jonathan Hatton looks like out there in full pads.
Yeah.
You know, what Lloyd Avant can kind of do in this offense as a Swiss Army knife, type of option. Cause like you said, it seems like he's had a really good, few weeks of practice so far.
Sure. For sure. And of course, as always, this is the case basically every year or close to every year. Got to see Bo Bentley. I mean, the freshman QB gets here. He's always the most popular guy because he's the new shiny toy. Again, by all accounts, had a pretty good camp, has played well in the scrimmages. Now, not usually going against the first team defense like John Mateer is, but nevertheless, I mean, there's a lot of good players over there. We talk about the depth all the time on Oklahoma defensively. Just excited to see Bo as well, and Whit Neubauer for that matter. But obviously, Bo, the new guy, everyone will be – whenever he comes in, I'm sure he'll get a little crowd pop. I mean, everyone's going to look forward to seeing him throw it around a little bit. Is there anything in your mind defensively that you're going to learn? I feel like defense is always harder in this because you're not going – you're going full speed-ish. I mean, you're not trying to injure your opposing guys, I mean, across the way. Where does your mind go defensively? And is there anything that you think you will learn or can learn from Saturday?
I don't know how much we'll learn per se, but I am kind of excited to see that defensive line, what it could look like. Because look, they get out there, they're going to be without the four guys that were their starters most of last season. Taylor Wine was like a kind of part-time starter last year and like certainly performed at a, you know, starting level and all SEC level. You know, David Stone and Jaden Jackson are both starting caliber guys, but they're not going to be out there. And you lost Grayson Holden and Dominic Williams and R. Mason Thomas and Marvin Jones, who all started a lot of games for you last year. So this is largely going to be a new look defensive line out there, even with Taylor Wine available. But I'm curious to see what some of those guys look like. You know, we've talked about Nigel Smith. We've talked about Trent Wilson and the big jumps that they've made this offseason. You know, Bishop Thomas, you know, I don't think any of us have really gotten to see much of him, but we've heard that he's, you know, kind of savvy, kind of funky as an undersized guy, kind of like a Grayson Halton. Sure. What do those guys look like? What does Danny Okoye look like coming off the edge now that he's got that another offseason under his belt? So I'm just really, you know, curious to see what that defensive line looks like, even again, if it's paired back and they're not going, you know, 100 miles per hour against that offense this Saturday.
Yeah, and to that point, like, I can't imagine a Taylor Wine will play a ton. I mean, the spring game is not really for the known commodities. You know, same thing for Kip Lewis. Can't imagine a play a lot. I mean, it just doesn't seem like that's in the cards with how cautious they've been this spring. And again, like, the guys who have been around, it just, you know, probably get out there and let them play a little just because they've, you know, you built up to it over the course of the spring, but it's going to be for the younger guys and the new guys. And so same thing, I would extend that to the linebacker room, kind of the same thought. Like, it's a lot of new faces. Does Cole Sullivan look like he just knows where he needs to be? You know, that sort of thing. And obviously these young guys were putting a lot on a James Nesta. We talked about it with Colin last week. Taylor Heim goes down. Looks like he's going to be out an extended period. And so that puts more on the plate of your James Nestas and these other young guys. Like, is any of the freshmen ready to go? A Dane Bathurst or something? Or, you know, a Marcus James, who's a year two guy? Like, they're going to need some of these guys because, as we talked about a lot, Owen Heineke, we don't know where that is. He's going to have his court case on Thursday. Hopefully we get actual resolution. I don't know which way that's going to go. Truthfully, it feels like a coin flip. But if they don't have him, like, they're going to need some of these dudes. And so, again, we keep prefacing everything. It's a spring game. We're not going to come out of it with some grand takeaways of like, oh, this guy's going to be amazing or this guy's going to be terrible. But you get at least a little bit of an idea. And so there'll be a lot of eyes on all those young linebackers for at least a couple of them to pop and to flash a little bit. And for Cole Sullivan, just to kind of look like he, you know, because we all know the abilities there. It's about learning the defense. Does he feel and look like he knows where he needs to be a lot of the time? That'll be the main thing with him. So I agree on that.
I was going to say, they might need Kip Lewis out there on Saturday because
true.
Yeah, you don't have Owen Heineke right now. You mentioned Taylor Heim. I think Jacob Curry is dealing with some too.
Yeah, as well. Yeah.
Marcus James has been in a blue non-contact jersey. So it's like, is he able to scrimmage in that situation? So you don't have a lot of fully available bodies there at linebacker right now. So you might need Kip Lewis out there to play most of the spring game, at least with the first team defense.
Yeah, that's extremely true. And then there's always, you know, an intrigue too, with just like special teams stuff, not like kicker punter. We have an idea. I mean, I think punter is a little bit of a battle. Kicker, we know, obviously Taysen Dell back at Groza, but just who's returning punts, who's returning kicks, what does it look like? I mean, we've been out at practice. We've seen a lot of different guys doing it. Also, we've heard a lot about Lloyd Avant wanting to take over that kickoff return. When we did punt return last week, we saw Jacob Jordan and Jasir Rogers doing it. We've seen a lot of other guys do it as well. Satania did it last year. Just, I don't know. There's always a little bit of intrigue in just who they choose to have do it. And then do they make any plays? You know, there's some intrigue certainly there as well. And we don't know the format of the spring game yet. The spring game, it's changed a lot over the years. Brent Venables kind of adopted a little bit of the kind of like offense versus defense thing. Whereas, you know, back in the Lincoln Riley regime, it was a lot more like two teams splitting it up. We have no clue what the form. They haven't announced anything yet. I would lean to probably offense, defense again, if I had to guess. But, you know, we'll see how that all works.
I was going to say, we just know that it's a game.
That's literally all we know.
A scrimmage of some sort, which is a lot better than last year.
Yeah, big step up, no doubt. So look forward to it. You know, it's a noon kick. It looks like the weather's going to be fine, I think. It might even be a hint of a chill in the air in the morning. But I think the high is like low 70s. So I think by the time we get to kick time, it should be pretty nice out there, hopefully. And I'd imagine a pretty decent crowd. You know, the fact they didn't have a spring game last year, you know, there's a lot of just interest, I think, in this thing. So we'll be there on Saturday, noon kick time. The two of us, and like I said, Colin Candy will be making the trip up as well. And we'll have full coverage like we would most every game. There will be a thread on the board for our VIP members. And we'll obviously have full coverage afterward with any game story stuff. And Colin and I will have the instant reaction show that we'll shoot on the field after the game. and we'll be able to hear from Brent Venables and presumably Ben Arbuckle, John Mateer, and everyone else afterward. You do all that in the YouTube channel. So should be a good day to kind of put a bow on the spring a little bit on Saturday. Any final thoughts from you going into the weekend? I think, we've kind of hit everything. We're at that point in the spring. It's like, let's get to the spring game and kind of wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you had something.
I know. So we kind of covered it.
Yeah. No, we covered it. So look forward to it. See you on Saturday. And by the way, also the recruiting angle of it, obviously, we'll get into that on Thursday with Colin. He'll be on the show. Obviously, the spring game, just as much of it is like a fan event and a game for the current team, it's a recruiting weekend, obviously. Lots of guys are going to be in town. Colin and I have kind of teased it. We kind of touched on it, but we've been trying to save it for this weekend, for this week's show, and now we will get to do that on Thursday. It's a huge visit list. Lots of guys are going to be in town, and Colin and I will get into that on Thursday. So we'll set the table on the recruiting side of it later in the week, so be sure to check that out because it's a big recruiting weekend. It's one of the biggest of the year, the spring game weekend, so keep an eye for that. Coming up later this week on the Thursday show. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break. All right, let's get into some other sports. Let's start with softball. It was big road series wins for both softball and baseball. We'll start with softball, though. Obviously, they had the massive series with Texas down there in Austin. Tom, we've been talking about this series for a few weeks, kind of just building up toward it, like – obviously, we know OU's really good. They're almost certainly going to be in Oklahoma City. They're putting up historic numbers with the power numbers, and what Kendall Wells is doing is still hard to fathom. But this was the weekend where it was like, all right, we're going to really know about this team going down to Austin, playing a top-five Texas team on the road, and they won the series. I caught most of these games. I watched pretty much all of yesterday's game, which was a wild one where Texas was able to avoid the sweep in extra innings. The main things that jumped out to you, I mean, obviously you go down there and get two. It stings a little bit to not get the sweep because they were so close to it. But obviously you win a series down there. That's a big statement. They're now back to number one in all the polls, or at least the biggest polls that I saw, which, you would expect. They were number two. They go win two down there. The thoughts are for you on this team. It feels like they're playing really well and rightfully are at the top of the polls and like should be considered a heavy, heavy contender to win another national title. That was a big series win down there in Austin for Oklahoma.
Yeah, huge series win, especially being able to take the first two games. I think the big takeaways for me is like, you know what you had in Audrey Lowry, and obviously she went out there and just spun a gem on Friday night in the opener, complete game. Miley Guacheno, really strong performance in game two. I think she went 6 innings, was it, before giving way to Lowry for the save there.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that stood out to me is not just like Guacheno kind of emerging as like that reliable number two, which Oklahoma has really needed. It's that the defense has really backed them up. Friday and Saturday in particular, they played some incredible defense out there in the field. Kai Minor making a diving grab in center field, or the infield turning some double plays, but the pitchers were fielding their positions really well, which when you're playing a team like Texas that often relies on more small ball to produce runs, wasn't necessarily the case on Sunday, but they manufacture runs more than they do just launch them out of the park. When you can get your pitchers fielding at a high level like that, goes a far way. And I know the defense was a little bit shaky early in the year, but they've been playing, I think they're top 10 in fielding percentage since the start of March, I believe. So they've been much improved defensively. I think being able to win those first two games the way that they did kind of put them in a position on Sunday where they already had the series in hand. So I think Patty Gasso kind of approached it differently. I think that she kind of put more of an emphasis on getting some experience for some of those younger pitchers. Obviously Sydney Brazon started, but then, they brought in Berkeley Zakay. They brought in Alyssa Parker. Kirsten Deal came in and pitched a really solid inning in relief. And even though, Zakay and Parker, they both gave up home runs, I think they did some good things in a very tough atmosphere. So it was almost like, it was a bullpen game largely, but it was one of those situations where they had the advantage of having the series in hand already. So they were able to get these players some experience, and the fact that Oklahoma was still in position to win this game, despite seemingly not really like prioritizing the fact that they could have gone for the sweep, says a lot about like where this team is and where it can go right now, in my opinion.
No doubt. I mean, I feel like you learned a lot about this group this weekend down there. And, you know, obviously I mentioned before, but the Kendall Wells thing, it's just, it's unbelievable. It's hard to believe. It's hard to wrap your brain around. She hits her 31st homer on Saturday. Freshman record, hurtling toward the NCAA record. Going to get there, barring something shocking. I mean, she's got a ton of runway here.
Yeah, and it was the go-ahead home run, too, in that game. It was the
It was a huge homer. And that's the other thing that kind of stood out to me, and I've talked about this for years, talking about this team, because it keeps being the case. And I wondered every year, because it's unbelievable how it's new players. Players leave. Freshmen come in, like a Kendall Wells. And it just continues to go where they just have this inevitability that they've had forever, where it's just if they have an out, they're in the game. It's been like that forever, as long as I can remember, going back to, you know, obviously when it really started to roll again in the, you know, the mid-2010s. It's been like that ever since, and it just doesn't matter. Players leave, new players come in. It was like that again this weekend, and Kendall Wells hits the homer, you know, like you said, to take the lead on Saturday. And even Sunday, they end up losing, but down, you know, they're down in the seventh. They get the big home run to tie it. You know, it's just, and again, I know they end up losing that game, but it's just the ability to just, it truly feels, and it's a cliche, but it is completely true for them. They are never out of the game ever, like ever. And that's the case again this year with this group. It's unreal. I don't know how they do that. I don't know how Patty manages to just have them never lose belief at all. They just have such an unbelievable ability to hang in there when things look bleak. And you saw that again this weekend, for them to rally on Saturday. And again, I know they lost on Sunday, but they did it again, where it was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me, when they tied the game in the seventh. It's just, we've seen them do that so many times for years and years and years. And so, yeah, they're going to be fine. They're going to be there at the end. I feel fully confident that might not be the last time we see them play Texas. You got SEC tournament. You got, obviously, certainly the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City in June. Feels like very possible that they meet up again there. This was a very competitive series, though, and good for them. Good for them to play games like this, and for those young players, like you said, to get an experience like that. So good weekend down there. But, yeah, just the ability to just never be out of games. It's been there forever, and it's there again with this team, no doubt.
Yeah, you mentioned Sunday. They were chasing the entire game. Like, they fell behind 3-0 early and, you know, kept on getting within a run, and then Texas pushed it back to 2 runs. And then you get to the seventh inning, and you get 2 extra base hits, both of them coming on a full count. And both of them against Texas's ace, Teagan Kavan.
Right. She threw like 300 pitches this weekend, by the way.
It's ridiculous. But to do that and be able to tie the game despite everything else and force extras, and then you take a lead in the eighth, the top of the eighth,
right,
before giving it up in the bottom of the eighth, with just an absolute nuke by Katie Stewart at the end there.
It smashed that building out there, apartment, whatever it is. I mean,
like the third or fourth floor of it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but like, I'm with you right there. It's like they just, if they have a strike left, there's a chance for them, just with the way everybody in this lineup is hitting right now.
It's crazy. So they're really good. That's a heck of a series win. Again, definitely stings to not get the sweep, because you were so close to it. Yeah. I mean, they had the lead in the eighth, you know, but obviously a great series win. They're back up to number one in the polls, and we'll see where they go from here. Obviously Bedlam this week, which is exciting. It's Bedlam baseball and softball this week, baseball on Tuesday, softball on Wednesday in Oklahoma City. Obviously very exciting, and some more tests to come, but we're kind of getting to the home stretch of the season here. I feel like we've been building up toward that Texas series forever. And after Bedlam, let's see, they got Arkansas this weekend at home, which is another big series, obviously. So more to come for this team, but definitely a very productive weekend down there in Austin. And by the way, did you see the end of the game yesterday? Were you able to quickly find the way that ESPN, that was a mind blower, the way that that unfolded, where it just all of a sudden it was off. I didn't know what was going on.
So I had a little bit different experience of that, or with that, because there was a little bit of a power surge in my house when Kendall Wells was at bat in the seventh or eighth. Yeah, bottom, or top of the eighth, Kendall Wells was at bat, I believe it was. Was that it?
I can't remember.
Or set.
It was in either between way. The top and bottom of the eighth is when they switched it, I think, if I remember right.
Okay, there's a little bit of a power surge between the top and the bottom of the eighth. So I missed Kendall Wells flying out. By the time my router got rebooted, I was able to turn on, you know, the ESPN app, and I clicked on the game, and it was on the pregame show, but I was able to quickly get it like right as Hannah Wells was coming up to bat. So it was like very fortunate timing for me. Yeah. But I know a lot of people had some trouble there with just the way.
It was bizarre. I had it in a multi-view with the Masters and a couple other things, and I didn't have the sound on at that particular time. And all of a sudden I'm looking at Charles Barkley, and I was like, what happened? Because I was wondering, did it go into a rain delay? Because it was kind of bad weather down there.
Right.
And eventually I found the game. I basically got it on just in time to see Texas win, essentially. It was odd. I know a lot of people were baffled by that. And it was crazy because the way that Texas scored so quickly, a lot of people didn't find it and were like, did they win? And it's like, no, they lost. Just an odd – that was an odd – I can't recall a situation quite like that. Yeah. A lot of people were left just very befuddled through the end of that game. But anyway, just kind of adds to the – what was a crazy series. Crazy series. All three games were on national TV. All three games were close. And I can't help but feel that they got better for that, certainly. And a great series win down there. So a lot to feel good about with OU softball right now, no doubt about that. As far as baseball, we'll shift over there. Same thing. I mean, a very good – road weekend for Oklahoma. They got 2 out of 3 at Vanderbilt over there in Nashville. Pivotal. I mean, absolutely pivotal to get to. You know, it felt like I wouldn't say they had no shot to host if they didn't win 2, but it was going to be really hard. And that's back on the table now. A really weird series because a lot of things went not to plan, frankly, for Oklahoma, but they found a way anyway. I mean, LJ Mercurius was really good on Thursday, thankfully. But the bullpen struggles. They end up losing the opener on 10-5. And then you go to Friday, and Cam Johnson can't get out of the first inning. And he's been really good the last couple of weeks. He only gets one out in the first inning. Vanderbilt puts 8 runs on the board after OU scored 5. It was 5-0 in the top of the first, and Vanderbilt came back with 8 in the bottom. The vibes couldn't have been much worse, frankly, at that time. And it was very low morale. You know, our game thread, people were very upset, and fairly so. I mean, it was looking very bleak at that time. And they go back-to-back with 2 grand slams to tie it at 9-9 and then another one to take the lead at 13-9 and end up somehow managing to win just an insane game on Saturday or on Friday. And then, you know, Saturday they come back and they find a way to win a close one, having to just bullpen their way through the whole game because Cord Rager was not able to go. And so they had to just piece it together. The bullpen was gas. They were running out of guys to use, but they found a way just to get through it. And, you know, we talked about it. I mean, the timing is funny because we talked about it last week on the show that, you know, Oklahoma didn't have a lot of power last year. And so that was a priority of the offseason, try and get more power. And one of the answers to that was Dayton LeChance, this catcher they get in from the JUCO ranks, who having a nice season, but did not have a homer. And it was like this, he was supposed to be the power. He hits 2 this weekend out in Nashville, right after we said it, one of them being the grand slam, then it being the difference on Friday. And so the long ball was kind of the difference. I mean, they haven't really hit a lot of homers this year, but they got some really timely ones in this series, and they find a way to get 2 out there, and the bullpen nailed it down. Jackson Cleveland was spectacular on Saturday, the 8th and 9th, just 6 out save, absolutely money. He was excellent, and, you know, again, a lot of things really didn't go to plan. When you look at Cam didn't get out of the first inning, Cord Rager was not able to go. They had to just use the bullpen to cover the whole weekend almost, but they found a way. I mean, they found a way to gut out 2 wins, and so a lot to feel good about. If you're Oklahoma, I think all those kind of goals, hosting, all that stuff is right back on the table. The SEC is so bunched up right now. Mm-hmm. At all. There is a million teams within like 2 games of each other. It's been a lot of just beating up on each other. And so, you know, you're coming back home from Missouri, who's the worst team in the SEC in last place. You're at home. You hate to call for sweeps, but you kind of need to sweep. You certainly need to win the series, but you probably can try to sweep. And if you do that, you'll be 10-8. You'll probably be in the top 5 of the SEC going into the home stretch. So, you know, big, big weekend out there. Camden Johnson was excellent. Jackson Willits had some moments. Jason Walk seems to maybe be coming out of it a little bit. He hit a homer this weekend as well. So Kyle Branch, some really timely hits, and we've been hard on him. He had some really timely hits, including the game winner, I believe on Saturday that was. So, yeah, really good series win out there. Just kind of the ability to overcome a lot of adversity and things not going well, but just kind of found a way to win two games. So very good series win that they should feel good about and finally get to come back home this week. So, you know, exciting stuff. I mean, a heck of a series win. They have Bellum on Tuesday up in Tulsa. That's another big opportunity against Oklahoma State. And again, like I said, Missouri at home, which is really the one SEC series that you're going to get where you probably need to go, you know, you need to take care of business. You need to go win the series and probably sweep them at home. So, but very needed, very, very needed series win out there in Nashville to try and get back into the conversation for hosting and that sort of thing. So a lot to feel good about there for sure for Skip Johnson's crew. All right, should we do a little bit of hoops portal before we get out of here? We'll shift over there. The portal is open for basketball, obviously men and women's hoops. Women's hoops did get a addition just today. Keely Parks from Kansas comes in. Obviously, she's from Norman originally. Former five-star prospect. So a nice get for Jenny Baranchek. And women's hoops, also we talked about it, a lot they need to address there. You know, just some big pieces out the, on the way out with Zaya Van leaving and Peyton Verhulst and Reagan Beers graduating. So a nice start to the portal for them. On the men's side, Tom, no additions yet. Feels like that's getting close. They have had some guys leave. A lot of the usual suspects. I mean, nothing that'll blow your mind. The biggest one certainly of note is Koala Tok did decide to enter the portal, end up landing at Virginia Tech. So he stays within the Power Five. The other portals are Jeff Wonko, Andreas Holst, and then Jake Hansen, who's a walk-on, has a portaled out. As of right now, between the guys who graduated and the portals, you signed one guy, Gage Mayfield, coming in. They have 9 roster spots open at the moment, Tom. So they have some work to do.
Yeah.
But nothing shocking, right, in the portal. I mean, I think we have both talked about it. You'd like to maybe keep Koala Tok just because of the upside and the length and the way he can shoot it, but we were kind of skeptical. And he does enter the portal. But otherwise, I mean, so far, knock on wood, no Xavier Brown, no Darian Reed, no Kai Rogers, Dade Forsyth as well, currently, you know, with the team coming back as of now. That could still change, certainly. But I think at the moment you feel okay with what's happened in the portal so far, right? If you're Oklahoma, you're making some headway with some players that will definitely help you. And right now it looks like your retention, not bad, knock on wood, but not bad.
Yeah, I mean, so far, you know, you're keeping 4 out of the 5 that you would have prioritized really maintaining. Yes. I think they would have liked to bring back Koala Tok at the right price. But I think it's just, you know, difficult when, you know, you have a new GM who is responsible for both evaluation and valuation and, you know, making sure that he has everybody at the right price point that Oklahoma views them at. And look, Koala Tok, great scorer, great scoring potential. We saw that at various points this season, just a pure shooter with that quick high release that's just, you know, doesn't need a whole lot of space to get it off or a whole lot of time. But the thing with him, and I think that this was, you know, probably where you need to kind of have discussions internally whether he's worth what, you know, he might think he is that defensively he was – you know, statistically the worst defender on that team.
On a bad defensive team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he had the worst defensive rating. He had the worst defensive box plus minus among all the rotation players. I think there were 2 guys below him. I think Jake Hansen was one. And I forgot the other, but it was guys that don't play. Whereas he was in and out of the lineup, you know, can obviously fill it up when he's in there really quick. But there's just something about him that was not clicking defensively. Watching him, it just feels like he doesn't have the lateral quickness right now to be a high-level defender or even an average defender. It felt like too often guys were just kind of blowing by him. Then obviously in the post, he doesn't really have
skinny.
He doesn't have the size to really combat bigger guys in the post, and then he's just a step slow on the perimeter. So I think that is, you know, why this loss doesn't feel huge. I'm curious to see how he does at Virginia Tech because, again, he's a great shooter, 41.3% on, like, what, 4.3 3 attempts per game this season. And that was just in like 12 and a half minutes off the bench in 24 games. But, you know, there's a reason that he was in and out of the rotation. And, you know, while he had some really good moments, certainly that Georgia game, the Colorado game and the Crown, you know, there's a reason that Oklahoma played a lot better down that final month and a half or so of the season when Porter kind of tightened that rotation, and they had Dayton Forsyth healthy, obviously, to kind of help with the backcourt depth there too. So yeah, I think in an ideal world you would have kept him,
sure.
But I don't think that it's, you know, it's a, you know, backbreaker that he left. I think it's more important right now that to this point you've been able to keep Darion Reed, you know, Xavier Brown, Kai Rogers, Dayton Forsyth. I think you still, you know, you have a lot of needs to fill. Like you said, 9 roster spots that they need to fill. You need a starting center because I don't know if Kai Rogers is ready to start right now, but I think he's ready to be a guy that can, you know, give you like Mo Agee was last year, where he can give you 15 to 18, maybe 20 minutes a game off the bench and continue to develop because he showed some really good things late in the season. But you need a starting caliber center and you need to be willing to pay for one because those are at a premium. You need another guard to put alongside Xavier Brown in the backcourt because while I think Dayton Forsyth is really good as your third guard, I don't know if he's ready to be a starter right now either, especially because that's, again, another small backcourt if you are starting him and Xavier Brown. And we saw, you know, they had a pretty small backcourt this year and weren't a very good defensive team. So I think you need a bigger guard like in that 6'4 to 6'6 type range to pair alongside Xavier Brown if you can. And you need someone else on the wing to put there with Darion. So you have a lot of holes to fill. Like you said, they're making some headway with some targets. It's still, you know, I know the portal's been open for almost a week now, but it's still kind of early in the process. You know, the dead period just ended Friday. So that was when they were first able to, you know, really make in-person contact and get guys on campus for visits. So we'll see where they go with some of these guys. But it's, you know, it's a lot to follow right now. A lot of moving parts. I think they're casting a wide net and just kind of assessing a lot of their options as, you know, Lucas McKay gets a feel for how to build this roster with Porter Moser.
Yeah, no, I'm very interested to see just what they're able to do. And, you know, Roger Denny talking about the putting more resources into it. And like you said, Lucas McKay, they have a GM now. You know, this offseason is extremely interesting in the portal, but I'm with you on everything with Kual. I mean, I liked Kual. You know, you look at the length, the way he can shoot it, it's so exciting, but the defense held him back, kept him from playing. And so, you know, I got it, you know, I debated with a couple of buddies like a week ago. If you could only keep one, Kai Rogers or Kual Atok, where would you go? And I, you know, I like Kual, but I leaned Kai because the size, and look, you're losing Wiggy and you're losing Kirill. So it's like, do I want to replace all three bigs in one offseason? Like, you need some size, right? And so I leaned Kai, and I wasn't sure the way that was going to go. And again, knock on wood, none of this is settled. The portal is still open, right? Anyone can still leave. But, you know, Kai's freshman season probably didn't go the way he hoped, or certainly what we had hoped before the year. You know, his minutes were kind of, you know, hit or miss at times. They brought in Kirill Alatanza that really nuked his play time. But like you said, he did finish the season strong. And it's like, if you could get him to come back and actually develop and maybe take a step, get his body a little more, you know, in SEC shape, all that kind of thing. Like, he could be really good. I do believe that. So that's big. And so, yeah, very just interested to see where they go in the portal and what they can do. You know, how can they go get some high-end talent? And like you said, get bigger. Porter's talked about that. You got to be big in the SEC especially. But, I mean, look at even, you know, the team that just won the national title, Michigan. I mean, they're an extreme example, but they're huge. Yeah. They're huge, you know, so that's the way it's trending right now is you got to be big. And so, yeah, very interested to see if they can find a way to get more size in the portal, if they're going to be able to do that. I don't know.
And even, you know, you look at UConn, which was also big, but not as big as Michigan. Yeah. Illinois had a lot of good size across the board there too. And look, Oklahoma was more athletic and lengthier in some spots, certainly on the wings. But you just did not have that size, that difference-making size down low that these upper echelon teams have right now. And certainly you didn't have the size in the backcourt where you're playing with a couple smaller guards. So, yeah, you said Porter's talked about the need to get bigger. But, I mean, it costs money to get bigger. So we'll see what they're willing to – to do to land a big time center if they can find one.
For sure. Looking forward to seeing that. There is certainly a belief that there's going to be some movement pretty soon, maybe even before the show goes out this afternoon, potentially. You know, there's been some names kind of floated to me that I think we could see pretty soon. But I don't, you know, we'll see. But I do expect Oklahoma to start making some additions in the near future. So definitely an exciting time. And I imagine we'll probably do a portal segment probably the next several Mondays. So tune in and we'll continue to update this thing and we'll see where Oklahoma can do. It's a huge offseason. Obviously, we talked about it a lot for Roger Denny and Porter Moser, try and put a better roster together, try and get back to the tournament in 2027. I think that's it for now. Like I said, Colin and I will be back on Thursday. We'll kind of set the table for the recruiting side of things with the spring game. I'll probably get Colin's thoughts on some spring game stuff as well. And then Saturday, we'll have the full coverage. We'll be there all day down in Norman, Tom, Colin, and myself. Full coverage throughout the day. And, of course, like I said, post-game, get instant reaction from us, Brent Venables, Sean Mateer, Ben Arbuckle, all that good stuff, as we kind of put a cap on Oklahoma's 2026 spring camp. A lot more coverage throughout the week ahead. More player interviews, by the way, tonight down in Norman. Don't know who we're talking to yet, but we're going to get a few more players this evening. It'll be the last time we talked to anyone before the spring game itself. So keep an eye out for that this evening on the YouTube channel, of course, throughout the week on the website for more coverage. We'll see you on Thursday with Colin and myself and, of course, from the stadium on Saturday with all three of us. That's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Calloway. Signing off. See you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.